just set in the modern economy.
But another social problem is smuggling. I know Kev's going to talk about this in a bit, but I think smuggling is a really good example of how this, if you like, social crime of this kind, but also very nasty, noxious crime. I mean, let's take the present day, you know, we still have people smuggling. Now, there's no way that is a social crime. That's completely another out of order. But then, you know, you've still got the white van man, or woman, sorry, going over to Cali, filling up with cheap booze and snap, and coming back. It's still smuggling for all intents and purposes. But the social crime I'd like to talk briefly about is poaching, and mainly in forests. The forest law, I touched upon the Normans, didn't I, in the Doomsday Book? Well, William the Conqueror was very, very clear. The forests were his. Hook, line, sinker. Well, deer, berry, and wood. The whole lot. And he expected his barons to uphold that. So there was a little bit of give and take. I mean, some of his favourite barons could hunt at the time, but it was limited. And basically, what the idea was like, it was a bit like an old caravan holiday, in a way, that the court would all get up, they'd all pile off down to a forest, let's say local forest, they've got all about the country, obviously, set up, eat the man who left house and home, and then charge about the forest, over people's land, all their offices, catching deer. And it was largely deer, and there's a lot of status connected with deer, the eating and serving the venison. Now, after the death of William the Conqueror, obviously the Norman lords are still there, they didn't disappear. But there's a lot of fear. In fact, the feeling against the so-called Norman yoke comes right up to the 19th century. In fact, some people still mention it today. It was very strongly felt in the English Civil War, the English Revolution, when we got Charlie Stuart's head. It was felt that was the end, or was hoping to be the end, of the new Norman conquest and the conquest of this country. So some large landowners would ignore the forest laws. And this was sort of seen as a bit of a struggle against the state, the monarchy, and the forces that have been encroaching on people still to this day, still to that day, sorry. So not only would they ignore it, but also had the status. I mean, the large landowners, and there are different types of poaching, the large landowners would have staff, for example, that would look after the deer hens and such like. So there'd be a whole industry behind keeping these dogs fit and healthy, keeping all the equipment fit, or sharp, or saddles done, what have you. And every so often, the barons would go out and hunt. Because, of course, the king, the monarchy, couldn't be anywhere at once. So basically, I could get away with it. But also, there was other sidelines to this as well. I mean, the barons would be expected now on the Crusades, a very important point. You know, people were going off fighting on so-called holy lands for land and such like. Or they might just go and visit a friend 100 miles down the road. What would the staff be doing while they were away? Well, then all the dogs are there, got people fit, so they'd also be going out and hunting and poaching. So, I mean, even though there was some class struggle in there was also struggle against the state, if you like, and the ruling classes. But this all changed. 1649, as we know, January the 29th, we locked Charlie Stuart's head off. Good news. That was supposedly the end of the monarchy, and Britain was going to be a republic. So what happened then? You had all this crown land, and nobody owned it. So, basically what happened was, like, all the authorities broke down, some of the last landowners encroached on the royal land, on the ex-royal land, and called it for themselves. These are commonly known as liberties. Any of you heard of Kingswood Forest on the outskirts of Bristol? Thank you very much indeed. You might have got to know a lot more about it. Lex and Patrick don't know much about Bristol, but my mate's got to bring it. That's quite a story. But Kingswood, as I said, is just on the outskirts of Bristol. And it's one of the things I've been researching. At the end of the English Civil War, a lot of the army, post Putney debates and the Burford revolt, were being shipped out to fight in Ireland, and we all know what happened there from the old massacre danger and such like. But they were being shipped out from Bristol, and a lot of them still hadn't been paid. What they'd been fighting for, what they viewed as a war aim, had not been achieved, because the monarchy might have gone, but the major generals were still exerting a lot of influence, and society certainly hadn't been levelled. We had the diggers and the ransoms, the increase in printing, etc., etc. People were reading the Bible, making our own decisions about things. It's said in the Bible that land is a common ownership, common space, being held by all, wind stands, velocity, etc., etc. Excuse me. So a lot of these soldiers didn't want to go by them, had enough of being shot at, so they headed to Kingswood and started squatting up there. Kingswood is renowned for its coal mines. So they had the commonwealth, not only could they use the wood, etc., etc., but they could also dig a big hole and call themselves a miner. And also, they could have the deer around, because there's no one looking after them. Very shortly after that, there's no more deer. The deer were actually extinguished in Kingswood. But then, what you had was obviously the monarchy came back, Charles II, whatever, Charlie Stuart, whatever they called him, came back and started trying to reassert the Royal Authority. And one of the first places he thought he'd better do it was his pleasure parks, the Royal Forests. So he earmarked Kingswood, he set this bloke up, Tyburn was his name, and he was instructed to act as the Royal Warden and reassert authority. And this is one of my favourite stories, it's brilliant. This is first off, he tried to hand-in-hand in the Kingswood Scots, the Kingswood Miners, off their land. He got a few magistrates and a couple of local toughs together, rode on up there, and was quickly dissuaded from that idea, because a riot ensued, and they quickly got pushed off. So he had another brilliant idea. I mean, this is excellent, this is. He thought, I know what I'll do, I'll restock the forest. So he got six stags and six hinds, took them to Kingswood Forest, and let them go. What a muckhead, eh? Because the ones that didn't fall down the hills ended up in the castle ditch. They've lost their names, you know? And the Kingswood miners were still squatting up there until the late 19th century. In fact, they're probably still up there now, in fact, parts of them, aren't they? So, this is a good example of what, I mean, of the Persian Wars, and it increased. I mean, basically, the Royal Forests were restocked, and the deer wasn't completely exterminated, and of course they breed and such like. And, you know, there was more and more and more hunger. I mean, as you know, industrialisation, people were forced off their land due to enclosure and such like. You know, more people went to the factories to work, but the people who were left behind, the day labourers and such like, to find it more and more difficult. Now, they might have a little allotment, for example, but they weren't allowed to hunt. To hunt in this country, you had to own £100 per annum, so get £100 of money out of your holdings. And that is a lot of money in those days, back to the 18th and 19th centuries. So most people like us wouldn't be able to. And notwithstanding that, you might have a little allotment, and the deer would be charging over it, kicking our nets around, the rabbits would be having a little lunch and what have you. We weren't allowed to touch it. During times of great hardship, hunger and birth, you know, the kids might actually starve. And this is a truism. In this day and age, people did starve to death, you know, through lack, through want. Are you going to let your kids starve? No, you're not. But there were different types of poachers as well. As I said earlier, you know, it wasn't just about the lower classes fighting against inequalities of the war. There were moving farmers, if you like, who were a bit pissed off about not having £100, not being allowed to poach. And they would organise themselves in gangs. But also, they would utilise, and this is extremely true after some of the big wars, the Napoleonic War, for example, they'd utilise military training. As a good example, I mean, for example, when you went to fight a war, you know, you got dressed up as a cherry, they marched you out in long lines, and they fired grape shots at you. And those of you who were lucky enough to survive went to Chicago. But the regiments were normally geared up on local knives. So you'd be fighting next to your brother, the geezers you grew up with, got sword, etc., etc. So after going through all this trauma, it must have been really traumatic, especially when I went to Central Line, come back to what? You're not allowed to hunt, you're not allowed to feed your kids. So they used the military training, and sometimes some of the Midland farmers used these people with experience, because they might work from stable hands, farm labourers, etc., etc., to fight against this unequal war. And then, of course, there's the poor, the very poor. They normally wouldn't work in such large camps. They did from time to time, but on the whole, there'd be ones or twos or threes. There's many reasons for this. The less people who know, the less chance you get in home, because that's another difference in the law. If you've got caught poaching, and Roger touched upon the Black Act, and I'll talk about that a bit more in a minute. If you've got caught poaching, most rich people would just fight because they could afford it, you know. Poor people were hurt, simple as that. So you see the dichotomy in his mind. I mean, it did obviously differ from area to area, but on the whole, that's roughly true.
Where was I? So the small gangs. Keep their mouths shut, little groups, go out at night, they've got a dog rather than a pack of dogs, and they're more likely to set traps and springs, you know, because the spring traps are and stuff like that, and nets, because they knew the area very well, they knew the area as well as the gamekeeper. And what was going on was this very, very interesting sort of cat and mouse actually going on in the English countryside and in the forests, where the ruling classes would employ gamekeepers and such like, to keep a hat on these poachers, to keep them off the land, keep them here. I mean, this is something else, it's all about status as well. There's no way a landowner could eat in his deer. There's no way. You know, he just wandered for himself, you know. People start on your doorstep. It's out of all the way. Anyway. So there's this sort of amount, you know, and this war, this potion war, would occur. Now, the 1723 Blackout is extremely interesting. I mean, Roger Truscott touched on it earlier, it's during Walpole's reign as Prime Minister. Some senior Whigs and also high state officials, generals and such likes. There's a very good book on the read about this as well, Whigs and Hunters by E.P. Thompson, which is why I've got most stuff about Blackouts. And he writes about two chases just outside London, where some of these senior government officials live. And it's out of control. There's people all over their land taking their livestock, basically taking their games on. They brought in this act to keep it down, and as Roger said, it increased the amount of the capital crimes that you could actually hunt for, from about 16 or so to over 150. Including blacking in face, that's why it's called blackouts. Actually disguising yourself, being caught, disguising yourself. You could actually get hung by the neck. There's all sorts of other crimes, like cutting up and concealing game. Obviously poaching and such like, but also, very importantly, it gave the state powers, obviously it tripled the powers down to the landowners and magistrates and game wardens to be allowed to search people's houses, which was quite rare in that time, you know, the freeborn Englishmen and such like. So the game warden would come down, search your house, take your weapons away. This is very important. There was a disarming of the working classes, it could still be argued. Take your nets, it should be a livelihood. You know, and also take the family gun off it as well, and possibly shoot it quite many kids. You know, it was open class warfare. They didn't get it all their own way. There was a lot, because I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, the local magistrate and the forest wardens, they weren't going to the big houses and kicking the door. They were going to the little shanties and the little squatters' houses, you know. But at the end of the day, they were going to kings, kings of forest. There was a lot of struggle against this. There was one gang called the Cock Road Gang, where in 1817 there was 3 days and nights of firefights, basically, between the local authorities and the local squatters come poachers as they defended their properties against these incursions. So, basically, I'm going to finish up there, because I'm going to have a cup of coffee and then Kevin's going to talk. But I'd just like to say one quote, a very light quote, but this is a local Sir Thor Rogers, believe it or not, he was writing this in the 19th century. And he writes, crime itself, when you simply take over the definitions of who owned property, control the state, and pass the laws which name what should be crime. He is grinding English workmen to the lowest peasants and standing out organised crime. For more than two half centuries, the English law and those who administered it were engaged in every expression or act which suggested any organised discontent and in multiplying penalties upon him when he thought of his natural rights. And that is very much about the forest life. You know, everybody who lived in the forest felt it was there for all of them. It was like living in one great big supermarket. Like, you could walk out the door and get your food, and they try to take it away. And at the end of the day, to this day, there's still a lot of forest in this country. We still actually get arrested for taking the woods to keep them back in the car. Thank you, Mr. President.